RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark Delight Podcast with
Hump Day Val and
Beans.
Nice.
Yeah. So to start the show, I want to talk about how awesome the Telegram group is.
It's very active.
It is so cool. I am so happy that we did this. Everybody who doesn't know, you can find the link to the Telegram room where everyone who listens to the show has been congregating in the show notes below the show, wherever you're watching. And we've posted it in our respective social media platforms as well.
Indeed.
And I think as of this recording, right now, there are 974 members in the group.
Yeah, knocking on 1,000 people's door.
Yeah.
And that's huge because, like I said, and as we were talking about on Monday, it opens up so much more that we can do with the show, not only with information dissemination and just keeping in touch and breaking news and things like that, but we can also create really awesome interactive bits for a show that is not streaming live. So it's not like we can take live call-ins, but we can do other things to get the audience involved.
Yeah, and to be honest, there's a couple of really great things that have come out of this room in the past day. Basically, it's been a day. One of them is a great story idea for Uncover DC about the kind of history of HCQ and the way it was proposed was quite interesting. So we are actually on that right now. I thought it was brilliant. And then another thing that has come out of here is just this like really awesome feeling of community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And everybody in there is such a delight. I posted a little bit, but I'm just doing a lot of lurking.
I'm going to try and be nice because I told everyone I was going to bust your chops about this, but
yeah, but wait a second. I barely, what I do throughout the day, I just drop little things, into my own, Telegram.
I spend a good amount of time on Telegram, so I'm in there all the time, and I always have been. Like, this is an app that I've been using for years, so for me, it's like second nature to be in there. And it's funny because you missed something this morning, quite dankly. You missed something.
What would I miss?
Go take a look in the room. You missed
Telegram.
A very special at.
An act?
At. A-T. If you hit the little at symbol on the right, you'll find it.
Okay, let's see. It's very special at.
Yep, from a very special person.
Helga?
Yes.
Helga is in the Telegram.
Yes, she is.
Oh my gosh. I saw Brian Cates.
Yep, Brian Cates is in there.
Brian Cates hanging out. Of course, Harold is hanging. This is great.
It's
wonderful.
Really good, and our audience is brilliant. They just are. They're brilliant people. So make sure you get on in there, have a little party with us in the Telegram room where we're discussing all kinds of things. I also learned a lot about, there's a group in there that is really investigating the forensic audit in Arizona and the supposedly shredded ballots that were found in the dumpster there. Have you heard about this story?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so over the weekend, there were people that were at the tabulation center that found a bag that was full of shredded ballots, as per they. And they took that bag back to wherever they live and started trying to piece them together. And initially, and still, I'm just not confident enough about the ballots in that bag to be able to say that they were definitely from the 2020 election. Because to me, it seems like a huge setup, Frank. They pieced together a few pieces that show that the people listed on the ballots are candidates that ran for a district in Arizona in 2020. And then there are bubbles filled in with pen, not machine. But there's no way to know if those bubbles match the ballot that they pieced together. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So because this group, AZ Informer is the name of it, and I've been watching to make sure that they're, you know, doing the right thing, and they seem to be, said that usually the government shreds these ballots and shreds everything in a cross sort of a way. Like they shred them so that they can't be pieced back together, right? These were shredded just up and down like a regular generic paper shredder would be.
Okay.
So it just doesn't make any sense because, first of all, they're doing this full audit. And that would be caught immediately. Like, okay, we're short 50 to 1,000 paper ballots here. Where are they? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, so, I know. I also know that there's isn't there like a six month threshold that we're coming up on now where things don't have things could be incinerated and gotten rid of soon?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they 2018 ballots could be shredded now.
Okay.
If that answers the question right, I mean, I don't.
Yeah. No, no, you know, it just goes back. It just goes back to what we were talking about with what's his name, Mark?
Yeah,
from Arizona,
Fincham, Representative Fincham.
Yeah. When we were talking with him, it just goes back to that whole thing where, you know, it's crazy to see how much time has passed. That it's you know, this November 3rd was so many months away, almost 5 months, coming up on 6 months, and you know, I mean, even a couple of weeks or 2 months after the fact. You start worrying because what you're really trying to get down to the bottom of, you know, something fishy is going on. You know that you're dealing with people who have absolutely no scruples. So why give them any time whatsoever to try to shore up whatever plot was executed? And after so much time here, like what could give anybody confidence that's doing an audit right now that what they're auditing has not been tampered since?
Well, because they'll see it.
Okay.
Like, in other words, the people doing the forensic audit there will see the deletion of things or the move. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay.
So that's the kind of audit that they're doing. Now, there's this whole other, there's another thing that happened too. There was a farm that was owned by one of the people involved in all of this at the elections level that burned down. This hen farm burned to the ground, like this huge fire, and they lost all these hens. And it was that same weekend the shredded ballots were found. So people are like not sure what to make of that, whether or not it was connected or not. And I say, you know, why would this guy burn down his business to hide? You know what I mean? It just doesn't, I don't know. Listen, I just have learned so much about jumping to conclusions about things. Like, I was personally in my like growth throughout doing this, I've learned that it's better to just kind of take a breath and wait a little bit to see what happens than to jump onto a narrative. Like, I would never have published a story about this, Frank, until I was absolutely certain that they were 2020 ballots that were found shredded. And the interesting thing about it is, the Board of Elections there have come out and said, we're going to, you know, press charges against these people that went dumpster diving for these ballots. We're sending this over to the AG in a criminal referral. We have video of them taking a board out of this dumpster and trying to break into the front door. Huh. And my thing is, that doesn't seem characteristic of these folks. Like, it just, that doesn't really jive for me. But again, I don't have the video and I don't know. And the second thing is, if they have the video of that, then they certainly have the video of them putting the stuff in the dumpster. So let's figure out who did that, who put that stuff in the dumpster. And then, you know, video from the folks on scene actually showed an open warehouse where anybody could have walked in and out. And so much so that one of the senators there, the lead senator over there, one of them anyway, Kelly Hart, I believe her name is, had to do a tour of this facility with the guy, Pritcher, I think his name is, that's now running the operation over there, a newly elected guy. And like, he had to show that his key card didn't even give him access to the room. And here's all the ballots. But apparently, that, as Mark was saying, they had put them on a truck and they were going to load them and bring them somewhere. And then the media reports, like, they don't know what they even want to do with these ballots. They're not prepared. Now they're sitting on a truck. But why would you break the chain of custody like that? So there's a lot of weirdness going on. But again, it's going to come out in the wash when they do this audit. Now, separately, there's a ton of drama. Quite honestly, I'm not really paying any attention to it because it distracts me from other things, but this is apparently something people are fighting over, that Joe Von Hutton Pulitzer wants to do this audit and says that he's the only one that can do it correctly with, in terms of like finding the document artifacts and stuff like that.
Right.
And from both sides, I've read some perspectives. On the Jovan side, they say, you know, we know we can trust him. He knows this document stuff like the back of his hand. He's the one who came up with the idea. He's been working hard to do it. On the other hand, the people from Arizona who are in charge of picking these people are saying he's never once ever run an audit like this before. And we only get one shot. So they're looking for other people that have run these types of audits in the past to be able to run this audit so that they're not in a conundrum of somebody doing something on this grand of a scale with this much importance for the first time.
So first time for everything.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't know where I fall on that. I don't have an opinion either way. I really do think that the people in Arizona who have fought so hard, the Senate has fought so hard for this, Frank. They have not given it up. That they would not squander the opportunity. They're very interested in getting to the truth of the matter here. I don't think they would squander the opportunity and hire some deep state auditing firm to do this work just because, you see what I'm saying? Like, I just don't,
yeah.
I don't think it's characteristic at this point to think that they're looking to tank the whole thing on purpose.
Right.
Why bother going through all the scrutiny?
And is this just basically to give local governments and state governments, state legislatures, the fuel to move forward with whatever corrections that need to be made? Or is this a part of a national? Because what could be done nationally when you see how many of the federal courts just don't care? So is this mainly just to empower the states to move forward with things? And
Yeah. Okay. I think what this is really, you know, listen, even if courts don't want to take up these lawsuits, it doesn't matter at the end of the day because the state legislature's in charge of this or should be. And I think that one successful audit that shows that there were some sort of shenanigans in a state as important as Arizona is will empower the rest of the country to be like, you know what? I think we need to do this too, given what we've experienced and what our constituents are saying.
Right.
And I think that that's what the purpose of this is. You don't need the courts if the state legislatures are doing the right thing. I expect that the left will start to sue at that point.
You know. And this is this is government, and this is what we live underneath. This big shit flinging food fight, and we have to somehow find a way to live a life while all this is going on, and we're caught in the crossfire because, of course, all this. This back and forth is just about being able to win the rights to our income and our consent. It's so sickening when you see the lengths to which these people will go to in fighting and battling each other in courts and this and that. And what is it? What is it to what do you really do? They really think that people think that they're serving us in some way, that any of this serves us?
No, I don't think so at all, actually. But I do think that I hate to keep coming back to this, but, you know, given where we're at in this country in terms of individual liberty, if this doesn't get fixed at this level right now and H.R. 1 gets crammed through, you know, H.R. 1 has implications for the rest of time. Where it's really, really horrible, terrible, terrible piece of legislation. And
so what did that change? I'm actually going to be talking to Chris Ann Hall about that and the Equality Act tonight. Did H.R. 1 actually get through the House?
It did.
So now when's the day for the Senate vote?
I don't know what the day for the Senate vote is. However, I do know that there's a counterpart bill to this that is seeking to actually firm up election, you know, a federal election law, meaning you can't randomly mail out absentee ballots to everybody in the state just unsolicited. You can't, you know, you need to have stringent ID and be a citizen to vote. Like just basically the counterpart bill to the Democrats saying, you know, we don't really have elections anymore. You might as well just, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I doubt that that will go anywhere. And you know, that was the whole point of them doing what they did in November was because they wanted to just make this codified. I will keep coming back to the fact that I feel like there should be some group out there that is focusing on these few senators, the moderates of the world, that we could possibly swing over for things like this to vote against them and give them the support that they need to go against their party. Because I think just like what's going on at like there was an article put in our chat group, Frank, about preparatory schools, like the really expensive ones that everybody is, you know, like the rich people go to, and how they're indoctrinating them with race and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And all the parents know that it's just messed up, and they know that they're brainwashing their kids and that this is wrong and horrible, but they're all too afraid to stand up and say anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if we had a way to empower these people to actually do something right for a change and stand up to this before the country is just completely gone, that would be a beautiful, beautiful thing. But people just need to really grow a set of cojones.
Well, yeah, I'm asked all the time, or at least the question is posed all the time. What constitutional protections do we have from this or that? So, you know what? Constitution or no constitution, things that are being done to you are not going to be stopped being done to you until it's no longer okay for it to be done.
Right.
It's just whatever you allow will persist. And that liberty knows really no limitations of geography. It's not like, oh, well, this is America. Geographically, this is America. So this is where liberty was planted. No, the liberty tree is something that is in the hearts and minds of people. And what you do, what you allow to happen to you will persist. And that's just what it is, regardless of if you're living in a monarchy, under monarchy, or a representative government of some kind. You will be abused by people in power unless you check them and say no more. You say, there's some hidden clause in the Constitution that'll make this all go away. The Constitution is not a spell book.
No, and it's not even something that exists if it is not adhered to. And I think what we're seeing is more and more of an inability to adhere to our founding documents that were written by men who were imperfect but had a very perfect message. It's really something else. Somebody brought up to me the other day, I don't even know how to add this in. You know what? I'm going to hold on that thought for a little while because it doesn't fit exactly right here. But, you know, it's a document that really, if we followed it, we would all be so much happier. Everybody would be. Like, what is happening in this country right now is both beautiful and horrifying at the same time. It's beautiful because so many people are waking up to what we have been traveling down the road to become, while so many people are still slaves to it at the same time. So, I mean, I really do think there are a critical mass of people who are like, okay, enough is enough already. But it's just, when is that going to be the prevalent thought, and when will we stop being led to slaughter, for lack of a better word? As a matter of fact, here, the reason Helga joined the group is because of this video I recorded of her this morning. We were talking about her returning back to school full time next week, and this is what she said.
I'm sitting here asking Helga if she thinks that she'll be
better. Oh, I didn't know the camera was this way.
Better off
in school full time now. That we're going back full time next week. And she said,
I said, I'm more comfortable at home because when I'm at home, I can sit in my room and I can do my work. But at school, I have to be in a box with a mask suffocating me all day long and worrying about touching a desk and washing desks.
Why, they make you wash your desk after
you leave? Yeah, they're like, you gotta sanitize your desk.
What do they give you to do that?
Like wipes.
And how many kids are having their mask below their nose throughout the day?
Oh, yeah, like almost all of them.
And you're in a plexiglass box.
Oh, yeah, I'm in a box all day long.
What does it look like?
It's like there's like these things and they're glued on and they're like little slivers and there's two sides to it and the plexiglass goes in the middle of it and they're like all around the desk so that it can hold it. And then there's one side that's longer, and then there's one side that's short. So if you're in science class and you're looking at the teacher, this side is long and this side is short. But the thing is that the person sitting next to you has another short side, so it doesn't even work.
Oh, so the short sides are facing each other?
Yep.
Instead of having their long side facing
in some classes, yeah.
That's silly.
Like,
It's almost, we're almost there.
My math teacher said yesterday, he was like, I get why they're, you know, putting these in, but, like, can't, if you have the coronavirus, can't it just, like, go over the plexiglass?
So your math teacher gets it.
Yeah.
Do you have other teachers that don't, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, what are some of the things that you hear from some of your teachers?
Oh, like, my fourth block teacher told me yesterday, I was near my friend, and I was looking at his Photoshop work, and she literally screamed at me, 6 feet apart! And I was just like, what about, I'm not supposed to live like this. Like, this is not supposed to be happening. I should be able to go to school, not have to be suffocated in a mask, not have to be in a box all day long. Like, I'm not, no one is supposed to live like this.
Amen, my dear Helga.
That's how we fix it.
Yeah. No, I saw those videos coming out of South Carolina schools a couple of maybe about a month or so ago now.
And I hate
I saw it.
The boxes?
Oh, yeah. The teachers taking, they had taken video footage of the inside of their classrooms that had been newly reconstructed with these stupid plexiglass boxes in there. And not only were they concerned about just the dystopian, weird way that everything had looked, that it looks like a laboratory, but also just being able to sit from the vantage point of where these students would be sitting, how there's obstructions in view of everything. You can't really see the board. There's just layers of cubicles in front of you, so you're looking through other people's plexiglass boards to see the chalkboard and stuff like that. It just makes things untenable from a classroom functionality standpoint, aside from the fact that you're being reminded that our lives have been completely upended by force every waking moment of every day.
Yeah, it's something else. And, you know, somebody, again, this is why this group comes in handy. Somebody posted in here today, just do a search of school district closed vaccine.
And oh, yeah. I posted that.
Oh, you did?
That was me.
Someone else copied you.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. So you get your, when you do that, you've got a barrage of videos and you know, news reports of schools closing down because teachers are having adverse effects from the coronavirus vaccine. Hundreds of articles.
I know it's all over the place, and of course they'll say, well, it was only a closure for the day, so everybody felt better the next day, something like that. But I have
one video that really, they did a news report. Of course, there's an ad before it, but they did a news report of this at a Fox 8 affiliate in Ohio.
1,600 individuals.
School employees across Ohio getting their first round of COVID-19 vaccinations. Akron Public Schools over the weekend, along with Tuslaw and Massillon. Plain local schools in Canton and Fairless local schools in Navarre. Parents of the Fairless students then getting this text on Sunday that the district would be closed on Monday after many of their school staff who received the injections on Saturday became ill.
So I don't know specifically about Fairless, but I'm not surprised if people are having some of the reactions like that to the vaccine.
Stark County Medical Director Dr. Maureen Ammon says reactions to any vaccine are to be expected. And a small,
it's all normal, Frank. It's all normal. No worries.
Yeah.
It's all good. That's just one of dozens and dozens and dozens. And it's interesting because it brings me back to another point. A little bit personal on the show today, but before I went down to CPAC, the kids get these like virtual assignments to do for attendance in the morning. And one of the teachers assigns this, you know, it's just like read through this article and answer these questions. I think I mentioned this on the show a few times that some of these articles have been really just completely biased and politically motivated. And, you know, finally, Helga was like, I feel like someone's trying to cram their worldview down my throat. And one of them was out about this vaccine and why everybody should get it and how important it is. And it's safe for you and blah, 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 blah. Just propaganda. So I finally wrote an email to the teacher And she called me while I was on my way down to CPAC, and we had a very heated and spirited conversation where I, you know, the ones she put out, Frank, was about the Truth Commission.
What's that?
The Biden administration that wants to form the Truth Commission.
Is that the reality czar?
Yeah.
Thing? Okay.
Yeah. And I said, I'm an investigative journalist. I can tell you that that is one of the most terrifying things that I have ever heard in my entire life. And you're presenting this information and other information to kids without thinking there's another side to it. You know, you're not giving them both sides. Oh, well, it's just for, it doesn't even count for a grade. And well, then who, I asked her, like, who picks these articles? Who picks these? She said, I pick them. Well, couldn't you pick something that aligns with the subject matter of the class, which is graphic design? Like, why is my, one of them was about race. And she's like, I know today's was very, you know, kind of unsettling. And I'm like, why did you choose it?
Because they need to inject their worldview into everything. And they don't even know why they have their worldview. You remember that New York Times article? I don't know if we covered it together, but I definitely covered it. It was maybe about 3 or 4 weeks ago. It said, don't go down the rabbit hole. And the subtitle was critical thinking, as we're taught to do it, isn't helping the fight against misinformation.
Oh, gosh. No, I didn't see that. That's terrifying.
This is what we're talking about. It is nonsense. And they have committed themselves to nonsense. And this is how they get their opinions from people who tell you not to think critically.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of the conversation, which, again, it did get very heated, because she was like, well, I'm offended. That I'm like, I am offended as well. And she's like, no one's ever complained. I'm like, well, you've got your first one. What are we going to do about this? What do I have to do? She's like, I will make different choices for, and she did. She changed them. She's not giving those anymore. Which I was pretty shocked about. I said, you know, I might be the only one who has the guts to call you on this, but I'm sure that either other parents have no idea. What really got her, to her credit, was when I said that my student felt very uncomfortable reading this stuff. And she was very taken aback by the fact that the student was uncomfortable about it. I don't think it crossed her mind even for a second that there could be any student out there who may not agree with what these articles was saying. So.
Would never have crossed her mind.
I really don't. I really think that she was shocked to hear that somebody was disagreeing with the content. That was a student. But we have to keep empowering our kids to be strong about this stuff, because it's getting to the point where, you know, everybody says homeschool, homeschool. And a lot of parents are very torn about this because they either don't think they have the skills to do it, don't know how, or need to get back to work and don't know how to homeschool their kids.
Oh, I know. You know what? I bring this up all the time there too. And I talk about homeschool a lot because I know I have no choice. There's no way in hell that if for as long as I'm in New York, there's no way in hell that the school system, public or private, is going to take Aurora.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where I certainly would love to have a large part in her education. And I would love to just find a way to, you know, it's more so about how can we get people, educators, pro-liberty educators, people who love this country and have committed their life to education, to go on out as entrepreneurs and create pod learning and more so semi-private learning scenarios for children who are looking to go off-grid with their education. Someone who can come on in and take up the mantle of the homeschool curriculum for parents who know that they want the child to be homeschooled or schooled outside of the national requirements, this and that, public and everything else like that. And but also have jobs and careers that they can't step away from, because then there's no one to provide for the family, period. So I understand the situation that people are in. This is why I say it's a great silver lining. We need educators to become entrepreneurs right now and bring their skills to the open market. There are tons of people, liberal and conservative, who do not want to send their kids to public school for one reason or another anymore.
Yes. And when I was in New York, Frank, before I left, just to let you know, I did attempt to form a what they would call in other states as a co-op, but we needed to do it as a charter school in New York, where it would be like a, you know, the parents that could stay home and educate would take in 8 to 10 other kids, and they would, you know, rotate, so to speak, between the few houses that were able to do this for whatever the cost would be, very nominal cost, just to provide like some living wage for the teacher. And, you know, nobody was doing it to make any money, but I moved like right in the midst of me trying to do this because I wanted to get my kids out of public school desperately. And I couldn't leave my job. I needed to keep working. So I couldn't personally stay home and do this. So I wanted to figure out a way. So there are some enterprising parents out there in your area that may have something like this.
I have to, I don't know where to look, but we obviously have time. She's only 6 months old, but still.
She should be already in preschool. I don't know what you're waiting for. Seriously.
What? Really?
No. I'm joking.
I'm having too much fun. She ain't going nowhere yet.
Ah, oh, she's so awesome. I love the, I don't know if you want me to talk about the video you sent me of her being the producer.
Oh yeah, she sits right on the kitchen table in this really awesome chair. For any new parents out there that have a child that can't sit up yet, they're not sitting up yet. This chair is called a Bumbo,
Bumbo,
and it sits them up and it's comfortable. And I put her right there on the kitchen table, and she's facing me, almost like she is typing on her own computer. And we're like just in a shared cubicle, and I just work and she's talking to me and I talk to her, and then Lauren comes in and takes her out and whatever. And we brought her to the beach yesterday for the first time.
Oh, very nice.
Because my mother and Tony were on the boardwalk, and it was so gorgeous yesterday.
Which beach did you go to?
It was Oakland Beach. It's right on, looks out on the Long Island Sound.
Cool.
In Rye.
That's great. Yeah. So, other stuff that I had to talk today about. Two more things. Here is Fauci, and thanks to Wendy, who provided a bunch of stuff yesterday that just drove me. I was reading all day long. Here's Fauci on C-SPAN. Let's listen to this noise eventually. There's a Live Brighter Tide commercial at the end of this one.
Ah.
You know?
Well, while the commercial goes on, what do you think about the German Shepherds that bit White House security?
Oh, gosh.
They had to send the dogs back to Delaware.
You know, they made such a big hubbub about that. Here we go. Come on. They made such a big hubbub about that, about those dogs and how great they were. And then they're going, I think Jen Psaki-Waki, whatever her name is, was asked about a cat. When is the White House cat coming in? This was what the whole press conference was about yesterday. The animals.
They're very comfortable. They're very comfortable psychopaths now.
I wonder if they will be releasing a press release, Frank, from the office of the White House pets the way they did when the dogs arrived. Did you see that?
No, I did not see that.
When the dogs arrived, they on Twitter released a press release from the dogs with a statement. And the press release literally read, I do not kid you, woof, woof, woof. Woof, 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 woof.
Well, America's back, baby. America's back, baby.
While the rest of the country was reeling over something or another, the Biden administration thought it prudent to release a parody press release from the two dogs.
Well, you have to keep it light so people at home, he's just such a great leader. You know what I said last night? When I laughed about this whole thing about the German Shepherds biting White House staff, if this happened under the Trump administration, that fat-faced toad from CNN, Acosta.
Oh, I was going to say, because Stelter got caught with his pants down, right?
No, he showed himself with his pants down and wasn't even caught.
Oh, geez.
He tried to humanize himself. But that fat-faced toad, Jim Acosta, would be pounding on every door that he can find to figure out whether or not the staffer who got bit was black or brown. And then he would run back to the studio. And for 3 weeks, he and Jake Tapper would talk about how, is it possible that the president, Trump,
trained.
had trained the dogs to be distrusting of minorities?
You're absolutely right, though. That would be
2 weeks, two solid weeks of broadcast, 100%.
Yeah, and they, you know, there's all these studies coming out now about how the ratings across the board, not just people just are not consuming news right now. They don't want to hear about it. They're not interested in it. It bothers them. They just want to get back to regular life. Like, ratings are down everywhere. Web traffic is down everywhere. I am kind of experiencing a little bit of glee about the BuzzFeed reporters or the HuffPo reporters getting laid off. That kind of makes me chuckle a little bit, to be honest. But, oops. But, you know, it's the Biden White House is like a walking, I don't know, hypocrisy. They went to a hardware store. Did you see this?
No.
Okay. They went to a hardware store and Joe Biden was walking around and the hardware store owner was basically saying like, oh, we're the first green hardware store. We have an urban garden growing, blah, 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 blah. And then he steps around and he tries to go look at the urban garden and the guy's like, you can't see it. And the people are all standing up there, the people at work there, and they're like, hi. And he's like, hey, don't jump. We need ya. And then he kind of like just loses his grasp on reality for a minute. And his eyes are like, just, he's like listlessly looking into the sky. And the handlers realize that he's about to screw up big time. And he's just kind of shuffling around back and forth. Reporters start screaming questions at him about the border. And the fear in this woman who tries to corral the press away from the president of the United States' voice is so palpable. She has no idea what he's going to say. She has no idea where he's going to go. She just wants him to get out of there fast enough that he doesn't say a word, he keeps his mouth shut, and he doesn't create something that they need to fix for the next week.
Oh, yeah. It's like you said, the fear. They know that they're dealing with an unpredictable, senile old man. A senile old man who has a long history of being overly aggressive with people, attacking people, racism. And when you have all of that has been deep-seated. Now, when you talk about a person who goes into these types of – these phases of dementia, it is mostly, especially for the large part of the decline, you are losing all of your cognitive abilities to really process short-term memory, speeches, names, places, things that were happening in the short term and recent, but you still have a lot of that, a lot of access to your long term memory, things that are just ingrained in you from over a lifetime. It's almost like a stain that you can't. It's a lot harder for people to lose that over time. Eventually, it does, but still, he has access to a lot of long term memory at this point. And I think that is what they're really, really scared about right now. He obviously has no control over himself. He can't really remember anything or function in the interim without reading. His reading skills are even really bad right now, but he still has so much access to his long term memory of a lifetime of just aggression and racism and just very unbecoming things that he has said over a lifetime, and now no filter.
No.
And easily triggered.
Right. And he doesn't realize what decade he's in. So some of those things he might say may have been acceptable back then, but to the woke crowd now would be completely unacceptable. Yeah. Here's that Fauci clip.
Of all of the pandemic outbreaks that I've had to deal with over the 36 years that I've been directing the Infectious Disease Institute, I have never seen a situation that even came close to this with regard to divisiveness over ideology, political ideology, that actually swept over into the issue of public health, where people, as you mentioned correctly in your statement and your question, that health officials who push for common sense, well-accepted public health measures.
Now, let's just stop for a second there.
Bullshit.
He's about to call out some of these well-accepted measures that have never been implemented in human history and even contradict his early statements. So how well accepted are they, Dr. Fauci? Here.
Of wearing masks, physical distancing, avoiding congregate settings, including indoor, are actually looked upon as the enemy.
Yep.
The enemy of getting the economy opened, the enemy of getting people's jobs back.
Freedom.
But they are the enemy of that. They are.
You know, and he also says that this has very, very strangely become rooted in ideology. And what is more ideological than saying that all of this stuff, it's married to climate change?
Oh, gosh, I know. Yeah.
It's married to everything. It was married to elections. It was married to everything. They took this. They married it to race. They married it to income. I mean, this has been nothing but ideological. If you wanted to go and approach this in a free society, then you take this and you give people the opportunity to learn about whatever the hell we're facing, a new type of flu, this and that. First of all, nobody even cares. Nobody ever gave a shit about the origin story of this. Like I said before, they still think this came from bat soup. So nobody knows anything.
There's more.
You think that in, oh, man.
You,
go ahead.
Are you exercising while we're recording the show?
I was listening to him. I'm sorry. I won't do that again.
You're out of breath.
I was listening to him talk, and I ripped off. While he was talking, I pumped out 50 push-ups. I won't do that again. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I just can tell that you were exercising. You're out of breath. I'm like, is he okay? I'm
worried. Yeah, it was a quick 50.
That's okay, Frank. I'm sure all the women at home are very excited thinking about that.
Oh, well, I was pushing from my palms.
That's pretty impressive, actually. 50 push-ups in, like, what, 59 seconds? That's one a second. Jeez.
Well, yeah, you have to get them done.
All right, here's the rest of Fauci. As long as you can continue to speak without being out of breath, which I'm pretty impressed, to be honest, that you were able to do that. Here we go.
And in fact, the common enemy is the virus, not the health officials who are trying to do as best as they can to get this country out of this pandemic grip that we're in. And the way we do that is by adherence to public health measures. And you're right, public health officials have been threatened and many of them have left their position. The president is very well aware of that and is encouraging everyone to look at this as a common fight. Also, I might mention, the recently passed $1.9 trillion relief bill includes in it a lot of resources that will be helping the local public health officials to do their jobs better. As city leaders, what you can do is please get behind your public health officials. They are totally dedicated to the health of the nation.
Yeah, sure they are.
And particularly for you locally, to the health of their community.
He's reading.
How much is inside of that bill that just straight out bails out these cities and these states, like New York?
For those two states, I don't know the exact number, dollar number, but it erases their deficits right quick.
Absolutely. And still, who did the math? They said that if you actually took this $2 trillion boondoggle and gave it directly to people instead of the 9% pittance that they're putting on out there, you could actually give everybody $10,000 a piece.
Yeah. Yeah, we did that the other day. We talked about that. I think it was $18,000, actually.
I would buy $2,000 more in silver. I would buy about $5,000 in, I don't know, maybe that would be the first time I would try to catch a little bit of a wave on some of this crypto crap.
Look, the funniest thing about all that is that's what people are saying, that because the stimulus is going to everyone, the people that are in a position that don't need that stimulus money to put food on the table right now are just going to put it into precious metals or the stock market.
You have to. Listen, you have to. If you know, we talked about this on Monday, right?
I believe so, yes.
A little bit on Monday. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, I know a lot of people out there are hurting and have been made to feel the hurt. But if you do not actually need this next $1,400 that's coming your way, put it into something tangible that will survive all of this, because the dollar's not going to survive very long. They may keep all the faces on the pieces of paper that they print, but there's going to have to be some sort of a reimagining of our currency and our monetary system. And of course, speaking about ideology again, that is what this is all leading toward. When they're talking about Great Reset, that's economic, that is travel, that's everything. At CNN the other night, they were doing another whole you were talking about it there too. We did it on Monday with the passports for vaccines. Yep. And here's another one from CNN from March 8th. This is from 2 days ago. CDC releases guidelines giving limited freedoms to people fully vaccinated against COVID-19. Here are the rules to keep following. So now they're letting us know more and more. You're getting a little bit of taste of your freedom back. How's that feel? This is your little – I mean, there's so much that's getting reset right now. Anything that you can do to shore yourself up just a little bit and get off grid financially is you have to. You can't take this thinking that, oh, wow, I just made $1,400. No, you got 1,400 IOUs is all you got.
1,400 IOUs to somebody or some group who will collect them at some point. So it's crazy. And the other thing, the next topic that I wanted to talk about in the few minutes that we have left, Frank, do you know that Twitter is suing Texas right now?
No.
Twitter is suing Texas for trying to infringe on their First Amendment right to free speech as a company.
What do you mean? In what way? Like, how are they infringed?
I'm going to read it, and I'm going to tell you where it seems as though Twitter has shot themselves in the foot. On Monday, Twitter filed a complaint in court against Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, who's launched an investigation into the platform's content censorship policies. Twitter argues Paxton launched the investigation in retaliation to the deplatforming of former President Trump, which the company ironically claims is an abuse of power. We obtained a copy of the complaint for you. Quote, Twitter seeks to stop AG Paxton from unlawfully abusing his authority as the highest law enforcement officer of the state of Texas to intimidate, harass, and target Twitter in retaliation for for Twitter's exercise of its First Amendment rights, the company wrote in the court filing. Quote, are you ready?
Yeah.
Twitter also argued it has First Amendment rights that guarantees its freedom to decide what is allowed on the platform. Quote, instead, listen to this very carefully. Instead, AG Paxton made clear that he will use the full weight of his office, including his expansive investigatory powers, to retaliate against Twitter for having made editorial decisions with which he disagrees. Editorial decisions?
Well,
I thought that you were not a publisher.
Well. Now, of course, you have to say which court is going to take this up and hold them to what kind of admissions that they're making. I mean, this is an admission.
They're admitting that they don't deserve Section 230 protection.
Absolutely they are.
I mean, this is a quote. You cannot make editorial decisions on a platform. It's almost like they said it on purpose. That can't be a mistake.
They have to have known. They know what they're up against. So, I mean, that's an interesting thought you had right there, too. They know what they're up against. So in a legal sense, every word needs to be scrutinized when you're putting together any kind of a public release or a filing. So why would they choose these words?
It's really, really crazy. I'm just looking through this really quickly, this complaint. I can't believe they're using the First Amendment as their basis for this. They don't want to provide any of this information to Ken Paxton, who's been alongside of, Texas alongside of Florida is now doing they're doing the same thing about social media. I can't believe that they said edit. You know what I'm going to do real quick?
What?
I'm going to search this complaint for the word editorial. Yeah, that's exactly what it says in here. That they made editorial. The First Amendment prohibits acts that threaten to exhibit the exercise of protected right of free speech. As set forth in this complaint, AG Paxton's retaliatory investigation and intrusive CID are precisely the sort of threatened legal sanctions, coercion, and intimidation forbidden by the First Amendment. The investigation unlawfully intrudes on Twitter's internal editorial processes and burden its protected activity, and do so solely because Twitter exercised its First Amendment in a way disagreeable to him. What?
Must be it.
It says editorial decisions regarding platform content that were and are supervised and directed by employees in California. What are they going to, is the Biden administration going to pretend to fix 230 and that's why Twitter's doing this?
What the hell are they going to have? What kind of fix would you expect out of this administration?
To broaden it for them.
Perhaps. I mean, it's either that or they're just flying high with confidence that they have all the right people in all the right places and they can just say and do whatever the hell they want. Everybody else is saying and doing whatever the hell they want.
Listen to this. Disclosure also threatens Twitter's editorial discretion. Twitter exercises its editorial judgment by creating and implementing moderation procedures that reflect sensitive internal deliberations over what discourse appears on the platform and in what manner. This is crazy. Complaints that Twitter and other social media companies are biased against conservatives have proliferated amongst certain groups, even as President Trump's Twitter account attracted tens of millions of followers. Wow. Wow. Well, I'm going to be studying that a little more closely, that's for sure.
Yeah, and when would that be addressed?
I mean, I don't know. It's just they just filed this lawsuit on 2 days ago. In California. That's pretty crazy. That's pretty crazy. That's crazy. They're literally foregoing their Section 230 protection in their own complaint, and it just doesn't jive right for me. But Friday, Frank, Friday we have Kash Patel on the show.
That's going to be fun.
I have a list of questions that I want to ask that wonderful, wonderful man who's spending the hour with us.
I have a couple of recent articles that he had a hand in writing that I think that there might be some good stuff in there I want to ask him about.
Cool. That's awesome.
So we'll see.
Good stuff. Well, you have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Pump Dave Hell and
Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. We'll see you Friday.
Later.
Radio Influence strives to bring you excellence in podcasting. We work with radio personalities like Ian Beckles, news and political pundits like independent journalists Frank and Tracy Beans, experts from the sports world like veteran football scout and coach Chris Landry, pro wrestling personality David Penzer, MMA experts Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan, and strength and conditioning coach Jeff Crochelle. If you're looking for food, sports, music, entertainment, politics, no matter the topic, Radio Influence has something for everyone. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.